Welcome to the Golden Hills Podcast, where our church leaders have conversations to encourage and equip you in topics surrounding culture, theology, and the kingdom of God. Now, here's today's show.
Welcome to the Golden Hills Podcast. I'm your host, Vinny. The holiday season is upon us, which means the end of the year is here. So we figured that we'd spend a few weeks looking at 2020. So this day, today, we're going to be joined by staff members Summer Ransom and Pastor Matt Pierce to hear their perspectives on the state of discipleship. So welcome back, Matt and Summer.
Thanks, Vinny.
Yeah, thanks, Vinny.
And today we will not grill Summer on anything. That was part of the last series, so you are officially off the hook.
More pandemic talk.
No, we're done with that. We don't talk about the pandemic here on this podcast, Summer. You know what I'm talking about. No.
I do. Goodbye.
So, what does Michael Scott say? I love inside jokes. I hope one day to be a part of one.
Yes.
And I think that's just what happened for everyone. Not that I would ever watch The Office because it's not a Christian show. So I just know the reference for all you people out there.
You've seen a meme that had that on it before. Somebody asked it.
Meme. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't even know who Michael Scott is, but I know you people do. You watch him. So I'll just reference that. Anyway, so the three of us, we're technically not in the same department per se. Matt, you and I are. Summer, you're actually the women's ministry department is that under shepherding? Okay.
Yeah.
So this is one of those crossover things where from an org chart standpoint, we're not in the same department, but from a functionality standpoint, we kind of are. We do a lot of the same things. And so, the three of us do, you know, we just have a lot of the same focuses. We talk and meet a lot because a lot of what we do carries over. And so this is one of those things where it doesn't matter what the org chart says. This is just kind of what we do. And one of our jobs is to be involved in discipleship, and discipleship could look like a number of different things. And we take that seriously at Golden Hill. So we just thought we'd have a conversation about the state of discipleship and what that has looked like, especially over the course of this year. And what are some of the things that have been good and what are some of the things that have been a struggle? And what is maybe some of the good that comes out of the struggle and those sorts of things? So I don't know, Matt, you've been around the longest, not because you're an old guy, which you are, but just functionally on staff. Well, you're not that old yet. I mean, you're still working, so that's good.
Well, you know,
we were just talking about 8-track tape, so.
Yes, actually, that just happened.
Thank you for saying we, because I was the one that brought it up. I mean, old compared to who? I mean, I'm kind of, there's a few guys older than me, so I don't feel like I'm.
Like Noah would have been older than you.
Abraham. Abraham would have been older.
I think we should move on from this talk because I'm losing.
Okay, I'll say you are the most active person though. Like you play tennis like 17 times a week, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So you've been around a while, so you've definitely seen how discipleship has, changed, if you want to call it that, or maybe some of the things we've done over the years. So you probably have a unique perspective, even from the standpoint of saying, like, there's not necessarily one biblical mandated style of doing discipleship, right? Like, the church is commanded to disciple people, but the way it's done, that might change based on the time and culture and the context, right? Like, do you want to, a lot of what we're doing here is just totally, free-forming the conversation, but what are some things that you've seen maybe in the time that you've been on staff in, like, different emphasis of discipleship or methods of discipleship? That we're still discipling people, but the way it's being done might have changed.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, we're all trying to become more like Christ, right? We're all trying to continue that sanctification process. We're putting off the old, we're putting on the new. And you're right, Vinny, that's going to look different based on many factors. And over the years, it's not that we've tried things that didn't work. It's just that we've tried a lot of things and those were beneficial. And then we move to other things, and those were also beneficial. So I would say currently and specifically this year, I was just thinking about, you know, this year, how it was, you know, greatest year of my life, right? But the way it starts, as we all start a new year, we have discipleship goals, because we're responsible for discipling people. That's what we do down here as pastors and directors. That's one of our primary responsibilities, is to help others and equip others, encourage others to grow in Christ-likeness. And we all start the year off, you know, with dreams and goals and visions and how that's going to be done. And we were excited to do that. And as we all know, we took a left turn or a U-turn or whatever you want to call it back in March. And a lot of the things that we thought we were going to be able to do, we weren't going to be able to do. And I think I can only speak for me, but initially that's a letdown. Like, oh man, you know, I have all these plans. I have these goals. I had it all laid out. And then none of those were going to come to pass. Because of the staff that we have and the encouragement that we were giving each other, and just God coming in and saying, you know what, discipleship isn't shelved. It's just going to look different than what you planned. It's just going to look different than what you thought. And when we got over that initial hump of disappointment, I started settling into asking God, okay, so you're obviously in control here. What is it that you have in mind? What's your heart here? How can we continue to be pastors and directors and coordinators? How can we continue to help disciple your people? What's that going to look like in the midst of everything that we're going on? And I'll tell you, that's when things started really opening up. A lot of the programs that we were used to doing, we couldn't do those anymore. We couldn't meet the way we used to meet. We couldn't utilize the church the way that we normally did for years and years and years, right? And we were forced to maybe slow all that down and think a little bit more relationally, and how discipleship can happen powerfully and effectively in either one-on-one relationships or even through online relationships and Zoom relationships. So what started out with dreams and visions and goals and came crashing in, you know, into a wall. And then I see that we got over that and started seeing what God was actually doing in this pandemic. And it became exciting. And so that's just kind of a taste of how things started and then how it progressed for us.
Yeah. Hey, Summer, you and I both stepped into new roles. I'm a month or two ahead of you. Did you come in February?
February 2nd was my start date.
Okay. So I'm literally just 1 month ahead of you, because on the first I stepped into the adult ed role as well. And that's where you and I have a lot of crossover in terms of how we function. Both of us obviously had, like, we get excited. We're in this new role. We have this vision. We start planning stuff out. And I don't even think I've talked to you about all those things that you were probably planning out. But were you able to, how do I even phrase this question? How much of what you were planning to do, like on February the 1st or February the 2nd, whenever you start your job, how much of that was based on previous ideas of what discipleship looked like? And obviously you're then thrown for a loop, as all of us are, especially because it wasn't even like, okay, for the next 9 months, you guys are going to be at home. It's like, hey, for the next 21 days, you're going to be at home. So we were just looking at this like minor inconvenience there. And it's just, it's kind of indefinite. We don't know when this thing ends. But how much of your planning was initially based on like just a past experience of being in the church and what discipleship looked like? And then just having to adapt and say, okay, what is the core of discipleship? And how am I going to contextualize that for this?
Right. I think having grown up in the church and being involved in women's ministries my whole like adult female life really helped with me understanding kind of how much of a woman's social circle can involve two women's Bible study or different ministries they're involved in. So I immediately felt that need to, we have to keep this going. We have to keep something where the ladies can still see and be together, because I know a large chunk of our Bible study are women who are retired, women who are widows, single moms, things, women that don't maybe have a big circle outside of their home. So that felt really important right away to figure out a way, to figure out Zoom. Like, I remember you and I having conversations early on, like, okay, have you done any research on Zoom? What do you know about Zoom? What do you know about free conference call? What do you know? Like, we were like researching every, what could possibly use? We use Google Meets. Do we, what's most conducive? What's easiest to use? What's all that stuff? So that became really important. And I, the blessing of something like this pandemic, this whole situation has been, nobody kind of knew what they were doing those first couple months. So there was a lot of freedom to fail and to just get up and try something different and then try something different and see how that works and see how people, if that works, if that's something they enjoy, if that's something they're showing up for, is that meeting a need? All of those things that we desire for our ministries to do, trying to figure it out. And God was kind. Zoom worked well. Zoom worked fast and it was easy to use. But it was a lot. That first, those first couple months were like, I think this is working. Is this working? it's working. Okay. Just quick.
It's interesting though, the point you just made about how we like had the freedom to try new things and freedom to fail. It's funny. And I'm going to make a comment that could easily become like its own, like a sermon point or its own podcast. And we probably won't do that. But how often in life do we wait until we reach a crossroads in order to do that, to have that mindset? Like the first time even I thought about something like that was when we sold our first house. Like in preparing to sell the house, that's when I did all the things around the house to make it sellable. So like all the things that Shayla wanted fixed or the things that you have to clean up. And it's like, why wouldn't I do this just when I live here? Why am I going to clean this up for someone else to live here? Right. Or it's like now we're forced to do something new. So let's try and let's give ourselves permission to fail rather than just, why don't we just do that as part of daily life? And so like what kind of like just a learning opportunity for us to say, hey, how come we have to have a pandemic in order to try something new and give ourselves permission to fail? Why can't we just do that in life in general?
Oh, totally. And Zoom was something that we had been talking about in women's Bible study for a little while leading up to the shutdown, because we understood that there are a lot of ladies who don't, being able to attend a Tuesday morning Bible study, I recognize that's a position of privilege in some ways, because that assumes you don't need to be at work, that assumes you don't have children, that you are working in their classroom or doing, you're not homeschooling. Like there's a lot of ladies that immediately eliminates. So this was something we had already been playing with. So it really became God's kindness that just allowed us to kind of try this platform out for a while and see if it was as good of an option as we thought it was going to be. And turns out it was. It was even better in some ways. While we all look forward to meeting in person again, I think it also opens up for some of our ladies who have never been able to attend study will now be able to participate in something that wasn't available to them before, just for scheduling issues.
So one of the things both of you have already referenced is the relational aspect of things. I guess we could start in saying a key aspect of discipleship is being in a relationship with others and not walking alone. Like I cannot just open up my Bible and say, Paul is going to disciple me. And that's my discipleship relationship. And that's all I need. It's me, the Bible, and the Apostle Paul. Like we need more than that, right? Matt, how is that something that from a small group context, which is literally like it's about people meeting in groups, obviously you have a struggle of not being able to meet together on a weekly basis in someone's homes. What are some of the struggles that you've seen with people from in the small group community? Obviously, some of our groups have met, but not all of them have met. Do you think that there's been a deficiency from some of our folks who have decided not to meet in terms of how they're actually gathering together and meeting together and maybe what they're lacking?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, for small groups, and I'm involved in multiple things, but they're all group based. Obviously, I oversee the home Bible studies, the small groups, but I also oversee support groups. And I also oversee a program we've done for years called Ephesus, which is also group-based. And one of the things that we were concerned about with the Zoom is that the relational aspect was going to suffer, obviously, right? You're not face-to-face. You're sitting in front of a computer screen. And I would say for sure, for a lot of people, they didn't even engage. And we saw a drop-off in the number of groups, but I would say not as much as I thought was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I just want to do a quick shout out to the small group leader community and just tell you how much I appreciate your faithfulness. And it was like Summer said, you know, we all had to try to figure it out. There was a month or two where the frustration level was really, really high. Equipment wasn't working. Phone lines weren't stable, that kind of thing. But man, my leaders really rose to the occasion, and just the number of groups that we were actually able to launch and maintain, whether online, and some of them decided to do that in person outside. But I was just so encouraged by just the willingness to try it and then work through all those issues. So shout out to you guys for continuing to do that. Thank you. And there's still over 60 groups, which is really good for where we're at as a church and for what we went through. But one of the things we were concerned about, as I mentioned, is that it just wasn't going to be personal, right? I mean, how can you be personal or vulnerable, or how can you relate to people through a screen? And I just want to say, and I'll highlight Ephesus, because that's a highly relational ministry. I mean, the whole thing functions on relationships. That's the kind of discipleship we do. There's a learning element, a teaching element, but there's a huge part of that that requires an intimacy, a vulnerability, and connecting points relationally. And what we discovered, believe it or not, is most, if not all, of the people that were there till the end, because not everybody who started wanted to do that through the end. But for those who were there to the end, we felt that there was even deeper connections and even a stronger level of relationship. And we've attributed it to a couple of things. Number one, we felt, and we got some feedback on this, that people, when they're in their own home and they're not in nothing wrong with the church, but sometimes some of the rooms are a little bit, you know, just white walls and everything. But when they're in their own home, looking into a screen, sure, you're looking into a screen, but you're inches away from people's faces. You're able to get closer than you would in person. And due to those factors and a couple of other ones, people were beginning to open up after they settled in and got comfortable. And we were able to establish some strong connecting points with Christ and with each other, and regardless of the fact that we were having to do it online. So it was a good experience. I know that's not the case for everybody. I know there are people listening right now that are thinking, I've lost my mind. It was a waste of 9 months. I can't wait till we get back. And I can't wait till we get back either. I'm just saying God used it. God used it relationally, and it was a lot deeper and stronger than I thought it was going to be. And a lot of people grew in spite of not being able to do it face-to-face. What about you, Summer? Would you have anything like that? Any experience like that?
And I think there were a couple of things that I really loved about Zoom. And one of them, like you said, was that face-to-face. I feel like there was a lot more face-to-face contact.
Like than eye to
eye. Yeah, in a room. Like you really could see each other. And a relational side is you really got to know people. You saw their homes. I know for us ladies, we saw kids running in and out, you know, little kids coming in behind and waving behind their moms or grandmas on screen, you know, those kinds of things that we wouldn't have in a normal small group setting during Bible study that opened up more conversation. Oh, well, hey, I see your grandkids here. Oh, one of your grandkids over. Like you just were able to interject more into life than you normally would. And I would notice, so we would do a thing during Bible study where we would leave the volume or the discussion open for the first 5 minutes while people were signing in and all of that was going on. So ladies would just have this gigantic big group Zoom conversation, which half the time sounded chaotic, but they loved it. And the ladies who didn't love it, they'd log in 5 minutes later and that was fine too. But what became really fun is you would see ladies start giving home tours and they would start somebody would say, oh, where'd you get that figurine? And then they have a whole story behind their husband giving it to them. And just that ability to get to know each other in a different way that was so much more personal. And I agree. It purely came because they're sitting in their own home and there was a different comfort level that you brought to the group than you would have sitting in a white room on a folding chair. It's just different.
You know, I'm even thinking about that. Shayla's involved in MOPS, and a couple Fridays ago, they did like a game night over Zoom.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, there was the, how, you know, 8 or 10 MOPS ladies who were on there, and it was like a family game night. So we have everyone up on the TV and it was a scavenger hunt. And so it's super fun because we're running around the house and coming back with the thing. And so it's even the same thing, like, oh, I'm seeing people who, you know, a couple of the ladies who I knew, it's like, oh, I'm seeing in your house now. I'm seeing your family. You kind of feel like you're literally having this game night with people in your home. And you never would have done that outside of this. And this was a substitute for being able to meet together.
Yep. And on a discipleship side, I felt like God was used it to allow me to see into when things weren't going well also. I could notice it was different. You got to know what people's homes feel like, what people feel like on Zoom. And then I could notice when things felt off, when ladies weren't taking care of themselves as well, or when kids, where there was a lot of crying in the back, you know, those kinds of things you could start picking up, which were also so helpful. Those are things that we have that habit. I think both genders do, but I recognize it in women, that habit of like, we're going to put on our best face forward when we walk into church, and life can be chaotic. And then, okay, kids, smile. We're at church. Here we go. And everybody walks in their Sunday best and we're smiling. It's a lot harder to maintain that when somebody has a window into your home in the middle of a hard season. And I think that was a huge blessing. There were a couple of times where God was just used that as a window to something that I was able to then speak to later. That was, I think, really good.
That's a great point. Just real quick, Vinny, I think there was a period of time where we tried to come across in our Zoom meetings like we had it all together, you know, let's pick a room where it's clean. But I think at some point everybody just said, oh, you know what? Forget it.
Yeah,
totally.
A kid's running by, someone's screaming. It kind of reminds me of the way church is now outside and how beautiful that is, that we don't have to worry about kids running around. I mean, we're not locked into that or even sort of enslaved to that mentality that I have to appear a certain way in a church setting when I'm hanging around my Christian friends. And I think a lot of us reached a point in our Zoom meetings where I'm just going to let people see my house the way it is. And all of a sudden this weight lifted and it just opened up. I don't know. I think it was good.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I even saw it with the level of kind of that comfort of, we all recognized during the past couple months that it's just hard to show up. Sometimes it's really hard to show up. And sometimes it's really hard to get your home in order and your kids in order. And for moms who are doing distance learning while they're trying to keep a home, while they're doing their job from home, while their husband's doing their job from home, and then they want to show up for Bible study. And that freedom and respect for them to show up and be like, hey guys, I'm not turning my screen on today. Trust that I'm listening, or I'm not turning my camera on, but I'm listening and I'll interject when I can, but I'm also in the middle of doing these 5 other things, or these things are going on around me. And just, I saw so much more grace from our other ladies, where I feel like if somebody had walked into a small group with 10 things going on, right, we would all be like, oh, that's really rude. But Right now it's not. And you would just watch all the ladies go, oh, I get you. I had a hard week too. In conversation opens up. And there was just so much more of that ability to show up with the best that you have in this moment and let that be okay. And let the church fill in the rest. And next week, maybe you'll show up 100%. Maybe you won't. That's okay too. But there was such a different kind of camaraderie and sisterhood I saw happening over Zoom in the last couple of months. That's been really lovely to watch.
Another thing I noticed, I think one of you mentioned like being able to actually kind of be closer to someone, even though you're in a computer screen. I actually noticed a couple of weeks ago when I was meeting someone outside at church in the courtyard. And I noticed when they were talking, I was looking at his eyes, which I normally when someone talks, oftentimes I'll actually look at their mouth because for whatever reason that helps me like process their words. It's really strange. And I found myself, I was actually looking at his eyes when we were talking. And I, because he's wearing a mask, like, you know, the and he was wearing a hat too. So it was literally like the only way I could connect with this person was to stare at their eyes. And I noticed that I was just doing that naturally in my conversations. And so it's like, wow, I'm actually, even in that sense, connecting with someone more because you're forced to, if when you're talking to them, if you're going to look at them, that's the only place you can look is their eyes. And so just another aspect where it's like, okay, it's actually training me to communicate better with people when we do have dialogues to actually make that visual contact.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And obviously when we're talking about all these things, what we're not trying to do is pretend like this is ideal. Like, obviously we would love to be able to have the freedom to say we could either meet in person or Zoom or whatever. So we're not just trying to pretend like, yeah, this situation isn't, you know, unfortunate, but this is really, it gets into a control situation to say, what can I control and what can I not control? And this is one of the first things you'll learn, whether you go through therapy or whether you go through an aphasis type group or anything, anytime you're doing self-discovery and you're trying to work through the baggage of your life, how often is our issue surrounding me wanting to control the situation? And so what can I not control? I cannot control if there is a worldwide pandemic. I cannot control what tier our county might go through or the regulations that they, you know, might set down or what our church decides to do to follow orders or not. I cannot control those. But what I can control is finding the positives or not having a binary, like we either are discipling or we're not discipling. It's like, well, what's happening in here? Or what are the goods that actually come from this? Have you guys had to battle through any of that in this particular situation or maybe worked through being a negative Nancy or anything like that, to use the term?
Yeah. I mean, we all had to make a decision, really. Am I going to just be stuck in the past and complain, oh, I don't get to do what I used to do, and try to force that back into existence, you know, and disobey and all of that and continue to do what we've always done and get stuck in that rut? Or the other choice was to evaluate what God is doing right here and keep in step with Him. So obviously, as soon as this whole thing is over, we're not going to stay online. We're not going to stay probably meeting outside, although that's so cool. Mm-hmm. We're going to come back and do some of the things that we normally did. But I think it, for me, it was just making a decision to either be stuck in the past, mm-hmm, and just, you know, get frustrated and resentful, or accept what's happening and look for God in the future and what he's currently doing. And because He didn't stop being God. Mm-mm. And unless I'm mistaken, He's in control of everything that's going on. So for me to refuse to move out of what was normal and what we used to do is almost saying, God, I don't trust that you've got this under control right now.
You know, what's interesting, Matt, I just had a realization, because you and I, we don't talk every day, but it's really close to it. And I, now that I'm thinking about it, I could even sense a shift in your own attitude just as we were dialoguing, you know, as we dialogue throughout the day to touch base. I could actually affirm that in you, where you were probably a little more irritated and frustrated with stuff early on. And you've just adapted. You said, hey, let's just make this work. So I think I've sent something.
You know. A bunch of things. We had a bunch of training events planned. I mean, you put all this time into stuff and then it's not going to happen. But yeah, you're right. There was a shift at some point for me. And maybe it was the anxiety groups you and I did together. Mm-hmm. And finding out that a lot of the anxiety I was struggling with was rooted in not being in control. And how good that was for me to realize, Matt, you were never in control. Okay. You just thought you were.
Thank God you weren't too, because how much of a mess would that have been?
So yeah, you're right. We've been through a lot. We both, I think, were able to get to a point. Now you guys, you started your jobs and then within a matter of weeks or days, for you, Summer, even.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a way you used to do things. So
no,
I'm sure it was a different experience for you.
Well, and for Bible study, right? I started 6 weeks before the pandemic hit, and the shutdown happened. We were 1 week into Bible study. Like we literally had the first week or the first 2 weeks and then shut down. So, but I will disclaimer here is I am an eternal optimist. It is my natural standpoint. It's my default is, well, this will be fun. Or what's the adventure? It just is. So I will own that. Not everybody thinks this way. But there was something a little bit adventurous about it for me because I knew I had just started this job and it was so fresh and it was so clear that God had led in this direction, that this is where I was to be serving him. And so there was almost this level of like, okay, Lord, you did this, all of this, like you brought me here. You put me in this position. You knew this was coming. Okay, Father, what next? Like, what do I do now? Help me thrive. Help me to jump into this. Help me to see the ladies clearly, see the ministry clearly, see where this is going, see how I can adapt. So, it was kind of, I would not say fun, but there was that air to it of, okay, Father, I have so little control over all of this. You're doing this. Keep going. Show me what to do next. But personally, I really struggled with, I started calling it a Zoom crash. And as an extrovert, I would get on Zoom for whatever. And it was like a sugar high. I would get just complete like people high. And then just like a sugar high, as soon as that Zoom was over within 20, 30 minutes, it was like, I would just crash and I would feel despondent and just lonely. And like all, it was like this very, like a sugar high low. That I started to notice because it wasn't, well, I love Zoom, especially in the beginning, it wasn't real contact also. It wasn't satisfying that real interpersonal need that I had. But, you know, I learned to prepare myself for it and make sure that I was getting time with people when I could and what was appropriate in my pod, in my bubble, all of those things. But that was something I had to work through. And once I recognized it in myself, it was something I was seeing regularly in other people, in other ladies also. And that was something just to be aware of and be prayerfully working through this whole season also.
I'd love to get your guys' perspective on something. Cause I know for what I realized is if I'm part of a bigger Zoom, meeting or something like that, that tends to wear me out more than if it's like a smaller thing. And I don't feel a connection in a bigger group. So for instance, the three of us, we could be in a staff meeting and it just feels weird. And I don't feel like I'm connecting to you guys at all, but the three of us could pop on like before the podcast and we could just be joking and talk about whatever. And that actually feels like a relationship.
Yeah, I would agree.
If you get more than one screen full, if there's people and you're scrolling screens, it loses something there. But if there's like, mm-hmm. there's about 15 of us that meet on Friday nights. And it's pretty cool because we're not used to each other and it's kind of fun to see who's going to have what background and we're sharing stories. And so, but there can be too many people. I mean, there's a limit to how many is effective, and I think you can have too many.
Is there something to be said for maybe even encouraging people, even if you are in a small group and there's 15 people there, are you making sure to connect one-on-one or in a smaller subgroup with people to make sure that it's not just that larger group? Because I know I need that. It's tough when you have so many people because you want to be aware of how much you're jumping in and how much you're not, and not monopolizing, and so you don't feel like you could contribute. I don't know, Matt. Have you had conversations with any of your small group folks about that?
The breakouts are key. I think that once we figured how to do the breakout groups within one Zoom session, that really opened the door. So you can take the 15 people and create 3 breakout groups with 5 people. And you can go in and out of those breakouts very easily. So I haven't had this conversation with every small group leader. I kind of wished I had now, but I'm hoping that they either heard about it or discovered it and learned how to do that, because that adds an element to a meeting, a Zoom meeting, that you're not going to get with 15 people or more all together for an hour and a half or longer. Mm-hmm. Those breakouts. We also saw a dynamics happening where people wouldn't share in a large group. But man, as soon as you get them into a breakout with 4 or 5, they're open up. So there's that as well, where people are going to be a little bit less intimidated when there's a smaller group of people.
Well, and that even happened in our anxiety group, where we might have 15 total people in there, and we would always start with a large group thing. And when there was time for people to ask questions, you might only get the same couple people contributing. And then once we broke into our breakout groups and I would lead one and you would lead one, and we might have 6 or 7 people each, that's when you had a lot more interaction as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. We did the same thing with Women's Bible Study. Mm-hmm. And I found over Zoom, the smaller the group, the better. Mm-hmm. Anything beyond, like you said, Matt, that full screen, anything beyond really 6 or 7 ladies, and your the amount of interaction you get will get less and less, is what we've noticed.
And I just realized, if you're on a phone, you only have one person per.
Yeah.
If you're connecting to your meeting with your phone, that's got to be really tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys seen any incorporation of maybe personal discipleship that you wouldn't have done either personally or with groups? I know for me, like, I actually meet with people and at times that I normally wouldn't meet. I might meet with someone like at night from like 8 to 9 o'clock now, because we can do it over Zoom and we can meet one-on-one and go through a study. And I would never meet with someone at 8 o'clock at night. But because it's a situation where I'm at home, I could say goodnight to my son and then literally walk in there and be available and not be out. Is that something you guys have seen be successful, or personally or with others?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've noticed, I just feel like across the board, we've all gotten a lot more flexible. I think a year ago, I felt like schedules were much more rigid, even when I wanted to meet with ladies, that the windows of availability were smaller. Where now, it doesn't feel that way, because of, I think Zoom really plays into that. I can put kids to bed and then just run over and hop on Zoom. I can put on a movie for my family and come over and get on Zoom for an hour. Those kinds of things have really broadened just the ability to check in with people. Mm-hmm. That's very different for me anyways.
I know of one small group leader and his wife that had stepped down because they were moving to Idaho. And I get these attendance reports weekly when a group posts those and gives me a chance to kind of see what the prayer requests are. And I noticed that that couple was still attending the group, even though they moved to Idaho. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. And in some of the groups that I've been on, several people have had to travel. Mm-hmm. But they show up on Tuesday night, mm-hmm, for the group. And sometimes we look at their background and are like, that's not your den. Where are you? Oh, I'm in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, cool.
I've even had that on Sunday classes where people are traveling out of state, yep, or whatever, and they're still able to attend the class.
I'll have people in their RVs.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. This actually almost got my wife in trouble because we went down to Monterey a month or so ago, and like she was able to teach from, you know, our little time. It's like, what does it matter if she's teaching from the living room at our house or in Monterey at a hotel? It worked great the first day until the second day when the power went out. And so she lost her Wi-Fi. And so she's having to like, we had to rig her up real quick. And so like, we had to go into like, she couldn't get a reception in our room. So she had to go to the, with her phone to like the back of our car and sit in there. So it's, yeah. So she was like teaching from the back of there.
Yeah. No, I think it's also that has given people the ability to be more faithful to studies. Like one of the things I've noticed is, I feel like ladies are way more committed now, and they are, whatever it takes, I will attend in my RV, I will attend my, you know, in the car, like all sorts of situations that, I don't know, I just feel like those obstacles would have been easier deterrents a year ago, but they're not right now.
Mm-hmm. And even when you factor in the Word of God and how critical that is in our discipleship, just some of the groups I've been in with you, Vinny, the way that you can share the screen to share the passages and do the teaching the way that you do it, mm-hmm. with the highlighting and underscoring and things like that. I mean, so we're not losing anything there, because mm-hmm. you would do that mm-hmm. whether we were in person or online. Mm-hmm. And online, it's right there in front of me.
It's easier yeah. to read, yeah.
In a big room, I can, it's hard to make out the passage or whatever. So bringing the Word of God into the small groups and the other meetings, nothing's got lost there mm-hmm. in the discipleship, the online version anyway.
Yeah. As we just kind of, you know, start wrapping up, what are some things that you would encourage our folks on? I think one of the ideas is, and Phil even referenced this a week or two ago in a sermon, how it's like, we just want things to get back to the way it was. And we kind of have this like naive, anachronistic view of wanting to look back in time. And Phil made the point, it's like, hey, things weren't like perfect. Like, you're romanticizing the past. And even in the future, let's say, like last night I was watching in the news, and some health expert was talking, saying they assume that by next 4th of July, you'll probably see a barbecue in my backyard. Like that, it was like trying to get to the point saying, hey, things are going to kind of be normal and we'll be able to do a lot of these types of things again. Let's say for us, 4th of July comes around and we have classes and we're meeting inside on Sundays and small groups are meeting in homes and whatnot. That doesn't mean that we're automatically going to say, hey, let's reset to 2019. What are some of the good things that we could actually take from this in terms of what we've learned and how we function and maybe how you guys are going to implement maybe some new things if you've thought that far yet, because we might just be trying to get through the current. But I don't know, Summer, do you have anything that you're saying, hey, I think I'm actually going to implement some new ideas?
Yeah, there's things that like I've saved, you know, there's like a study I looked at us doing this spring, and then the more I was studying it, I thought, no, this one needs in person, because there is something different about being in person. So that ability to even look ahead and say, you know, this will be a richer study if we can be together and we can experience large group in this specific way, that kind of stuff. But I think, I don't know, I think I'm probably idealizing the future. I can struggle with that. But part of me thinks it's just going to be richer. We have really been able to experience what the loss of being together. And I think I'm looking forward to that ability to all be together. And I think that will be something we will really enjoy for a while. And then it will become our new normal and we'll forget because that's what we do as humans. But
so you're like expecting a honeymoon period.
For sure. I think like there will be a bit of a honeymoon period. Yeah, I don't know. Other than that, I kind of feeling like I don't know what the needs are going to be, if that makes sense. Like, I know that when we shift back to being in person again and our lives shift again, that's going to bring a whole new set of struggles and needs for the ladies of the church. And I don't know exactly what those look like yet. And so I do find myself prayerfully going, okay, Lord, how do we prepare to meet needs I don't know? I don't even know what to anticipate yet.
So for you, it's not about returning to a program. It's really contextualizing and saying, how do I respond to this situation?
Right. Because I do think as we are coming out of this season, there will be levels of cultural grief that will be going on. Mm-hmm. And there will be levels of cultural processing this whole situation.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing that for a while. And how do I walk the ladies through that while we're studying books of the Bible and studying it within the whole scope of biblical theology and who God is? And yeah, all of those things are what I process.
That's right interesting. Now. I hadn't really put it together like this, but just as you said that, I'm thinking of like a soldier who returns from war. Usually that's when you hear about them experiencing PTSD. And even in our situation, we're still in the war, if you will. And so I hadn't even thought about the aftermath. I'm assuming that like, man, everyone's just going to be excited. But what are the things that we're going to struggle with after this?
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, this fall, we're going to study the book of Esther, and that's part of as women's Bible study. And that's part of that is I think there are things that we can relate with Israel being exiled and yet some staying in exile and some not. And some of those things that can be addressed and processed to help us look at some of these issues that I think culturally will be happening come this fall, come next spring, that will feel new to us, but will not be new to man. And they're there in the Bible that we can look at and learn from.
Yeah. Esther, the only book in the Bible that doesn't mention God, right?
Yeah, you know.
Isn't that weird?
Keeping it fresh.
Yeah, that's weird. Matt, what about you?
I remember Phil saying to us back in the spring when everyone was like, what are we going to do? And he said, Pastor Phil said, think of what discipleship would look like if we didn't have 2401 Shady Willow Wine.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it in those terms. Mm-hmm. And over the last months and months and months, that's really what we've done. And one of the things that I've discovered is when you have a church building and church programs, what can happen is you can just rely on those programs and rely on the building. And program attendance and church attendance become the checkpoints for how well your ministry is functioning. Mm-hmm. And so with all that taken away, those checkpoints weren't there. And it kind of forced us to rely more heavily on relationship and getting involved in people's lives and learning how to listen and learning how to share genuinely and authentically what's really going on, because we were all feeling that kind of pressure and that kind of anxiety. And when we come back, what I would hate to lose is the authentic relationships that we have been developing this year. And I would hate to just go back to creating big, huge programs and just resting on attendance as that marker. We're going to have programs. We're going to have the church back. But I'm going to make a point and really try to stick to this, that those programs in this building are really only here to foster relationships.
Mm-hmm.
A good program should have the freedom for people to come and relate, not just come and sit. So, yeah, we've got big plans coming back. We're all developing ministries and what it's going to look like in the fall of 2021. But I'm going to stick my foot in the sand and dig my heels in. And I'm just not going to go back to programs without relationships. And I'm going to continue to emphasize those relationships as a critical part of discipleship, not just attendance.
Yeah. And sticking your foot in the sand is always better than sticking your foot in your mouth. And so we appreciate
Well, that's going to happen too.
Yeah.
Or your head in the sand, either one.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
I feel like the amount of times Matt just shakes his head at you and I during
I totally agree with that. He's like, I mean, the disapproving older uncle or something like that.
Totally.
No, it was.
Don't miss it when you can't watch us. But there's a whole lot of like Matt just putting his head down and shaking it like, oi, these two.
No, it was more like me acknowledging, yeah, I got that reversed again. Yeah. Head in the sand, heel into something else. Anyway. Yeah.
No, but you said it right.
You guys to make sure and keep me straight.
No, you nailed it, man.
Don't worry, we'll heckle you. Yes. That's our commitment to you, Matt.
See, the listeners can't see any of this stuff going on. Facial expressions.
But I do feel like
my face is beat red right now. They can't see any of that.
I was going to say, so I feel like Summer and I are the two old men in the Muppet Show. Sitting in the balcony.
I don't even want to ask you who I am in the Muppet Show.
Who do you want to be, Matt? That's who you are.
Yeah, you could identify whoever you
anyway.
Want. Anyway, all I know is Mateo's Gonzo right now, so that's his favorite. So,
oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, hey, hopefully everyone found this in just an interesting talk and some of the things that goes on in our minds as we talk through these things and we're constant evaluating. And we hope that this, during this season that has not been ideal, but it's one of those things where hopefully you look back at it and say, hey, I never want to go through that again, but man, I learned so much. Or I hate that I had to go through it, but I'm glad I did because I wouldn't have gotten to this point. If any of us come out of this season and just saying, okay, I'm glad it's done, now let's move on, and we haven't learned, you know, I would just encourage you, do some introspection, do some reflection and say, hey, how can I grow, or what can I take that through that period in life and grow? Because I think any experience in life can teach us something. And whether it's losing a job or losing a family member or going through a health scare, I'm thinking of a friend right now, a gentleman who goes to our church who has been battling terminal blood cancer for a decade. And when the first time I met him, he told me, like, cancer is the fourth best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, what? And this guy, it's terminal, you know. And if anyone has an excuse to be upset and be all kind of Eeyore about things, it's this guy. And he's like, no, it's one of the best things that's ever happened to me in life. And so if he could say that about his terminal cancer, we could say that about shelter in place in a pandemic. So hopefully we all go in with that attitude and we always try to learn something. And it wouldn't be a good discipleship podcast if we didn't try to engage some sort of teaching. So we're letting that out there. So, hey, Summer and Matt, thanks for hopping on and sharing with us. And I'm sure you guys will return at some point. I have to say Lord willing now, because we don't know what we're doing ever.
Ever.
That's going to wrap up this episode of the podcast. We're going to take a Christmas break now, a holiday break. We don't say holiday break, I guess. We have to say Christmas because we got to keep the Christ in Christmas. But we're going to take a break and we'll return in January with more shows. So if you're just so bummed out, hey, go back. We have over a year's worth of shows now. You can check out old podcasts and hopefully those will edify you. Thanks. We'll see you guys soon.
We hope today's episode was a blessing to you. Please make sure to look up and subscribe to the Golden Hills Podcast in your favorite podcast app, like Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. And of course, you can always find us on the web at www.goldenhills.org. We hope you'll visit with us again next time.